coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you've come to the right place. We got a great show for you today, and I know that you're going to love it. Boy, today we have got Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry. We won't be talking about open carry per se, but we'll be talking about the FOIA request that Michigan Open Carry filed to the Michigan State Police, all about how the Michigan State Police are using the funds, how much money they're getting from license payments, and what they're doing with that. You may or may not agree with how the State Police are using those funds, and you might think that all of us CPL holders should get a refund, or maybe they should lower the prices, CPLs. Personally, why are we being charged for our Second Amendment rights anyways? But don't get me started on that, okay? That's coming up in segments 2 and 3. Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry. All right, what have I been doing? Oh, gosh. It is summertime. Gosh, I love summertime. Summertime is nice. It's warm. My garden is planted. It's growing. My tomatoes are going fantastic. This year, I did something different. You already know that I have chickens. Every once in a while, you might hear a rooster crow, or you might hear a hen start cackling in the background. That's because my studio is inside my garage, and it was a great idea to put it out here, but then I wasn't quite thinking clearly when I added a chicken coop right on the back side of my garage here. So if you ever hear a chicken cackling, it means they just laid an egg, and my bad. When I planted my tomatoes, and my peppers, broccoli, the cauliflower, all that stuff, I dug the hole and I put a wad of chicken manure down in the bottom of the hole, about the size of a grapefruit. And then and they are just growing like crazy. So I'm real excited about that. My pear tree, it's got pears about the size of, a golf ball out there right now. The blueberries are doing great. And then the mulberries are ready to be picked. Those are usually the first berry to come out in the summertime. My kids love those. They will spend hours sitting up in a mulberry tree, just eating and eating and eating. And of course, it ruins their dinner. But hey, mulberries are good for you. I kind of like it too. I've been eating mulberries since I was a kid. I mowed my lawn today. I love mowing my lawn. I love the smell of freshly cut grass. It just kind of wakes me up. It gives me time to think, because I put on the hearing protection, and then I just go ahead and think. I just go ahead and do all my heavy thinking while I'm on the lawnmower. People don't bother me pretty much when I'm doing that, and hey, it's just fantastic. So that's what's going on with us. Just a good family time, grilling burgers, taking a kid swimming, mowing the lawn, eating the mulberries. Life is good. I was looking at the news today, and I didn't see a whole lot that I liked. I mean, obviously, Donald Trump, he just came back from, his summit with Kim Jong-un, the North Korean dictator. And apparently, they're buddies now, and they got everything straightened out. And the threat of nuclear war, nuclear attack from North Korea, apparently is gone. And boy, even the World Cup is coming back to America. So, wow, everything's going great. There's no news to talk about. It's all good. I went to a website called DarwinAward.com. And, you know, we've all heard about the Darwin Awards, but I wanted to talk about that because every once in a while, a gun owner, usually a shady gun owner, who takes too many drugs or drinks too much alcohol, will end up as a Darwin Award recipient. So I thought, yeah, let's go on darwinawards.com and see what's been happening. What are the stupid people in the world doing today? First, let's go to wikipedia.org, and I looked up Darwin Awards. It says, the Darwin Awards are a tongue-in-cheek honor originating in Usenet newsgroup discussions around 1985. So they've been around for, 35 years almost. They recognize individuals who have supposedly contributed to human evolution by selecting themselves out of the gene pool via death or sterilization by their own actions. The project became more formalized with the creation of a website in 1993 and followed up by a series of books starting in 2000, authored by Wendy Northcutt. The criterion for the award states, quote, in the spirit of Charles Darwin, the Darwin Awards commemorate individuals who protect our gene pool by making the ultimate sacrifice of their own lives. Darwin Award winners eliminate themselves in an extraordinarily idiotic manner, thereby improving our species' chances of long-term survival. You know, I wonder how Charles Darwin would feel about having this award named after him. Accidental self-sterilization also qualifies. Of necessity, the award is usually bestowed posthumously. The candidate is disqualified, though, if innocent bystanders who might have contributed positively to the gene pool are killed in the process. So, you know, if you're looking to get this award, first off, if you want this award, you are really stupid anyways, and maybe you should get an honorable mention just for striving to get this award, whether you're successful or not. But okay, so that's what a Darwin Award is. Now, let's go on over to darwinawards.com and see what they have there. All right, let's just scroll down through here. Honorable mention, Numbnuts. Okay, what's this? Oh, this is just from a couple months ago. April 2018 from Australia. Footage posted to Facebook and Instagram shows an athletic male train surfer waving to the camera before leaping off a moving train as it crosses the Fremantle Bridge. Seemingly ignorant of the effect of momentum on his trajectory, the daredevil nearly smacks a pylon as he slams into the water. Compounding this blatant disregard for personal safety, our honorable mention ignores the presence of overhead high-voltage wires that are fully capable of killing a man with a 25,000-volt electric arc. Yeah, 25,000 volts, that's probably, that would do it. Why do young men do such stunts? A common speculation is that they are competing to win mates. I don't think I need a mate, not that bad. Boy, I didn't have to do that to get Sarah. You know, guys, if you feel like you have to do something like this to get a mate, something else is terribly wrong in your life, and you need to figure out what that is. Maybe you're just ugly. I don't know. But don't do this stuff. The stupidity displayed by the participants in the following tales stops short of the ultimate Darwin Award sacrifice. Thank God. Nevertheless, we salute the spirit and innovation of their misadventures. Okay, spirit and innovation. Wonderful. All right, well, hey, that guy didn't win. Let's find someone who actually won, okay? Road Rageaholics. Oh, we see this all the time. 20 February 2018 in Poland. Oh, Darwin Double. After a road collision near Stary Zrzut, two men emerged from their damaged cars and began arguing. The argument grew into a physical fight, then shrank down to blood stains on the asphalt when the men lurched into the adjacent lane of traffic. A lorry weighed in on the fight, permanently terminating the road rage between a 29-year-old from Krakow and a 40-year-old from Zambrow. Victims of their own aggression, the men are poster children for meditation outreach. That's sad. You know, something similar to that happened over in Ionia about 10 years ago. Two CPL holders got in a road rage situation, and They both pulled over, and boy, they just squared off of the hood of the car and just traded bullets with each other. And of course, that never ends well, and both of them were dead on the scene. I don't think they won an award for it, but boy, they certainly gave it their best. What's this? Soaked to the bone in Yellowstone. June 7th, 2016, Wyoming. Colin Methaniel Scott, 23. But you know, have you noticed that a lot of these Darwin Award recipients are young? That might give some credence to that saying, young and dumb. Was enjoying a graduation vacation at Yellowstone National Park when the beautiful Pork Chop Geyser Hot Spring reminded him that he could use a good soak, but hot potting is a forbidden delight. Oh, he didn't. Oh, no. Ruled off limits for good reasons. You will die. Still, this was a college graduation trip. The Portland resident thought his edumacation conferred the smarts to know when to break a rule. So Colin left the boardwalk and cruised up a hill in search of a private hot pot soaking spot. In this area of the park, thin mineral crust that resembles solid ground conceals scalding water pools. But he avoided these unseen pitfalls and found a secluded spring. Recorded on unreleased video, Colin is seen reaching down to check the temperature, slipping and falling into the boiling acidic water. That was the beginning of the end. Wow. Chemistry students will be familiar with the properties of a turbulent hot acid solution. A significant amount of rapid dissolving was underway while recovery workers were struggling with dangerously unstable ground and a lightning storm. When they reached the spring the next day, the water had finished her work. There were no remains remaining. Wow. Park Superintendent Dan Wenk stated the obvious. This tragic event must remind all of us to follow the regulations. College graduates are no exception. The Darwin Awards sincerely hopes this misadventure will serve as a warning to others. Hashtag your death matters. Okay, gosh. Man, maybe we should do this all the time. What are some older ones here? Modern armor. Oh, that sounds ballistic. Let's check that out. On 26 August 2006 in Leicester, England, Darren's death was a mystery. The 30-year-old was found slumped in the hallway of his house, bleeding from stab wounds to his chest. Police initially assumed that an assailant had attacked him, but they could find no supporting evidence. A year later, the inquest revealed why Darren can stake his claim to a place among the winners of the Darwin Award. Darren had called a friend, but minutes after he hung up, rang back to ask for an ambulance. The front door was ajar, and Darren was found lying near a blood-stained lock knife he had purchased whilst on holiday in Spain. Forensics investigators saw no indication of a struggle, and the coroner reported that the stab wounds seemed to be self-inflicted. However, Darren had shown no suicidal tendencies. His wife, who was on holiday at the time of the incident, cleared up the mystery and revealed why our subject will go down in history as a Darwin Award winner. As she was leaving for the holiday, she remembered Darren wondering whether his new jacket was stab-proof. Wouldn't you assume that it wasn't? That's right. Darren decided to find out if his jacket could withstand a knife attack. Did he choose to test his jacket while it was draped over the back of a chair? No. Our man thought that the best approach would be to wear the garment and stab himself. Sadly, his choice of armor proved less resistant to a sharp blade than he had hoped. The coroner reached a verdict of accidental death by misadventure. Oh my gosh. This is just amazing. Oh my gosh. Well, if any of you are interested in winning a Darwin Award, please stay away from me. You know, sadly, this is actually true, too. These people actually do these stupid things. Well, amazing. All right, enough stupidity for one day. Maybe we'll do one of these from time to time. I'll be searching for gun-related Darwin Awards just to remind people that, hey, guns and stupidity do not mix very well. Okay, We're going to be coming up here with Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry, pretty soon. And we'll be talking about Michigan State Police and how they use the license fees from the concealed pistol licenses. We'll talk all about that. We've got a two-minute break. While we're away, go ahead and check out DarwinAwards.com if you want to look at some more of those. But also go to 2amarch.com, the number 2, the letter A, march.com, 2amarch.com, because that's coming up next week, June 20th, the Second Amendment March. And then go ahead and check out our sponsors, elitefirearms.us and firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical. Check them out, see what they can do for you and your family. Okay, we're coming back with Tom Lambert from Michigan Open Carry. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere, and don't win a Darwin Award while I'm away. This is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. We will be right back.
My name is Siege Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. We are speaking with Tom Lambert, the president of Michigan Open Carry. Tom, welcome back to the Home Defense Show.
Hello again, Skip. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I think it's been almost 2 months since we had you on, and I thought, hey, this is a good time. I always like to hear from my friends at Michigan Open Carry. So, Tom, you've just briefly, 30 seconds, how do people go to Michigan Open Carry, and what's it about?
Sure. Yeah, we've been very busy lately. You can find us online. Just search for Michigan Open Carry. We're on social media, Twitter, Facebook. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group. There's thousands and thousands of people in our group that are discussing Michigan firearm laws and open carry community, concealed carry too, everything dealing with the Second Amendment every day.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, Tom, when I want to know something about open carry, you know, whether it's holsters or the actual statutes, I don't go to a police officer. I go to Michigan Open Carry because you guys have to know the law really, really well if you're going to be open carrying, because sometimes you get noticed and you just need to know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. So that's what Michigan Open Carry is really, really good at, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's no disrespect meant to members of law enforcement, but they're not as focused on knowing the specific ins and outs of the law. They're focused on enforcing the law, and so they're not going to know everything to a precise T, and that's okay. That's the way it works. Well, we're not focused on necessarily enforcing the law in and out every day, so we do take the time to focus on the specifics to make sure people really know what they're talking about, because if we mess up, it could really be our freedom that's at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. And police officers, you know, if they mess up, they could lose their life. So they're going to be focused on, okay, how do I handcuff this guy? What's my situational awareness like? And there's just so many procedures and paperwork and you name it, all kinds of things that they have to know. They can't be firearms laws experts. No one can. So, hey, that's where Michigan Open Carry comes in, and we appreciate that. Now, Tom, we have got the Second Amendment March coming up next week, June 20th, and you and Michigan Open Carry, you have been very instrumental in making that happen. So I, as founder of the Second Amendment March, I want to thank you for all that Michigan Open Carry does for that. So, and I'm looking forward to your speech next week. So are you writing it out, or are you going to go with your gut and ad-lib? But how are you going to work that this year?
I don't know. I'll probably figure it out mostly the day before. Tend to be how those things generally work out. So over the past few months, I've been thinking a lot. And I think a general trend for this year, especially in light of the circumstances of everything involved in the environment that we're facing nationally, is going to be unity. Is standing together. And everybody has their own different view of things. That's part of what makes our community great, is so many people view things from a different way. But at the end of the day, I'm not even necessarily saying we have to let go of our differences, but we have to be able to get past our differences and be able to find something to stand together on. And if you don't agree with open carry, if you don't agree with concealed carry, if you don't agree with carrying a rifle, if you don't agree with carrying a pistol, if you don't agree with dressing in camo, in shorts and flip-flops, and if your color, gender, whatever, none of that matters. We have to be able to come together on something, and the Second Amendment is that one thing that I think we really can come together on, and we must come together on. And so that's probably along the lines of what I focus on.
Yeah, well, sounds like we got a good preview there. I happen to agree with that. One thing that I've noticed is that if a person or a group or legislator or whatever demands 100% of everything that they want, they usually get 0% of what they want. So I kind of take incremental approach to that. So, I'm looking forward to hearing what you're going to say next week. Now, let's get into Michigan State Police FOIA request. I've been hearing murmurs out there and catching bits and pieces in the news. What is the history on this latest MSP FOIA request that Michigan Open Carry has made?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, we've been very busy lately. And then what there actually is, there's actually two FOIA requests that we are litigating. We've sued them twice now. The first one is, I think, the one you're really asking about. And with that one's kind of produced some very interesting information recently that I don't know how other to look at it except in a way that just looks very bad for the Michigan State Police. What we're doing there is we kind of look at the annual reports that the Michigan State Police put out. They're required every year to put out an annual report on concealed pistol license information, the number of licenses, the number they've processed, criminal charges for CPL holders, as well as the amount of money that they bring in. And to quote the law regarding the report, they are required to report a list of expenses from money that they bring in under the Firearms Act, regardless of purpose. So a list of expenses, regardless of the purpose that where it went. And so we looked at the report in the fiscal year 2016, which was the most recent report at the time we submitted the FOIA request, they brought in a little over $8 million, except about $5.5 million of that went towards this generic group called support systems. That's interesting because they list out a few categories of, well, here's these statutes and here are our expenses under these statutes, so otherwise known as their statutory obligations. You could say that's the stuff the law requires them to do. Mm-hmm. That only came out to about $1.8 million of the $8 million that they brought in. And so we're going, well, where the heck is the rest of that money going? We basically looked at it as, look, guys, you list out what the law requires you to do, but 75% of that just kind of goes toward, and 75% to the penny, mind you. It's not like they brought in $8 million and had $7.5 million of expenses. No. The exact difference between the statutory expenses and what they brought in was the exact amount going into the support systems category. So basically we looked at it and said, no, we can read between the lines here. This is profit. Mm-hmm. And it comes out to 75% of the revenue that they reported. And so we submitted a FOIA request. They, long story short, did not respond properly to our FOIA request. We appealed, saying, look, guys, you're not giving us the information we requested. They denied our appeal. We now sued them under the Freedom of Information Act. part of the lawsuit process is the discovery process. You can ask for certain information so you know what you're dealing with. And part of the information we asked for was all the communications back and forth regarding this FOIA request. And one of the communications that we found was from the woman that is responsible for actually compiling the data and actually writing this yearly report. She had sent to the FOIA coordinator all of her documents in which she compiles that information. So kind of think of it as maybe the working document or even the preliminary document. Now, the FOIA coordinator did not send any of that to us, but because it was in the email, we get it under discovery. Mm-hmm. And in that documentation, we didn't even have time to go into all the red flags there. But the first thing that stood out instantly was she had a list. In a column was for fiscal year 2016, and there were three rows. Row number one was application revenue, which was the $8 million that they reported. Row number two was live scan revenue of $2.9 million. And then the third row was, quote, CCW total of $10.9 million. So wait a minute here. According to the person who compiled the report, they should have been reporting $10.9 million, not $8 million. Now, again, that's not us. That's according to them. Mm-hmm. And so right off the bat here, we're starting to wonder, well, wait a minute. We have all of these questions about where the money is going, but now we're starting to have questions about whether or not you're even accurately reporting the amount of money that you bring in. And honestly, it gets worse from there.
How can it possibly get worse? Before you answer that question, how long did it take them to comply with the FOIA request?
Well, they dragged their feet out as long as they could. But what they did in responding to the FOIA request is, again, we asked for a list of expenses, and we were not coy about it. We sent them a very detailed request asking for that list of expenses, cited the law. They pointed us to the annual report. That's all that they did. Very, very lazy, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then we explained to them, no, the annual report is not what we're looking for. We're not looking for a summary of expenses. We're not looking for a list of expense categories. In fact, the lack of the information in your annual report is what triggered this FOIA request. So please understand, the information you provided us is not what we're asking for. Mm-hmm. And they denied our appeal, saying, no, we gave you what you asked for. Hmm. Pretty sure we know what we asked for, not you. And there's a lot of case law on this that you don't have to describe exactly, because how can you describe something exactly if you don't know what there is, which is the whole point behind you asking for it, right?
Right, yeah. That makes sense.
And so now, yeah, that's part of why we're filing suit, and the briefs back and forth have been great, and our attorney is taking it to task. But here's how it gets worse. So they reported eight. According to their own numbers, they should have reported 10.9. But, again, according to their own numbers, they processed almost 180,000 applications. And there are various amounts of money that they could get per application, but it's somewhere between $64 and $79 per application because there was a law change after 2 months of that fiscal year. But we looked at the numbers, and if we average it out to about $74 per application, which is a reasonable average, and you times 74 by 180,000, you come out to a little over $13 million. Hmm. And that's just on the application fee. You add in the extra $2.9 million for live scan, which is fingerprinting. Mm-hmm. That comes out to over $16 million, or more than twice what they actually reported as revenue.
Hmm.
So where the heck is all of this extra money going? Even if we go on the low end, the lowest amount of money they could have possibly received per application was $64. That still comes out to about $11.5 million when you times it by the number of applications that they say that they process. That's not even including the live scan number. You could say, well, fingerprinting shouldn't be included in there, and there's an argue why, no, that's wrong. But let's just try and view this in the best possible light that we can for the Michigan State Police.
Okay.
The $64 an application, 180,000 applications, that's about $11.5 million. That's the best possible light I can make this for them. They only reported eight. This is basic math here, Skip.
Oh, but those numbers are big. I mean, in their defense, those are big numbers. They need a calculator for that. Anyway, hey, listen, I respect law enforcement, you know, just as much as you do. But you
know, let me take this opportunity really quick here, because you bring that up, and you bring up an excellent point, and thank you. This is not a dispute that are patrolling our streets in the Michigan State Police. This is not a dispute. This is an administrative dispute with people at the high levels, behind desks, running the administrative processes of the Michigan State Police. And I hope everybody understands that distinction, and we want to make that very, very clear.
Yeah. Well, it certainly does sound like, oh, something's rotten in Denmark. So we'll, you know, when we come back here, we're out of time for this segment, but we got another 12 minutes after this. I'd like to talk about maybe motives or the why of this is why this is going on, and then maybe get an update on some of the other court issues that you guys have, because I know you've got a full plate, and you know, you had to go ahead and you had to get. You're working on your law degree now. It's kind of sad that in order to be president of Michigan Open Carry, you have to have a law degree, but it sounds like it's time and money well spent. So I appreciate that. Tom, we're going to take a little break here. Then when we come back, we're going to delve more deeply into this. This is Skip Coriel and the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Felix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical and protect your family now. Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. We're here in segment three, and we are picking up with Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry, about the Michigan State Police FOIA request. And boy, you know, we had a good conversation in the last segment, Tom, but the question that's bouncing around in the, you know, the empty caverns of my mind is motivation. Why would the state police, the administrators, whoever is responsible for this, why would they underreport? Why would they drag their feet? What are you thinking about that?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, or if you will, the $8 million question here.
Yeah.
We got a lot of other information in that. In what was dumped in Discovery. And if you want to read this, you can read it for yourself. We have it posted on our Facebook page. We blast out mailers. We are not trying to hide everything. We want this information out there for everyone. And if you can't find it for some reason, just contact us. Any of the social media presences through our email, you can email me at president@miopencarry.org, and we'll get you the information so you can look at it yourself. What it appears that they're doing, and this is nothing but a guess here, that they understand their expenses are only a small portion of the money that they're bringing in. And keep in mind, CPL fees went up in 2015. They went up because the Michigan State Police requested an increase, saying that they needed that increase to pay for their expenses. And so we see that they listed a number of people who some of the revenue went towards to pay for their salaries. And it kind of appears that they included just about anyone they possibly could. Many of these people earning high six-figure salaries, one of them in particular over $200,000 a year. And while they didn't necessarily charge the full salary of every employee, they charge maybe 10% of this employee's salary, maybe 20% of that employee's salary. And some of the people in there we know, and I'm not going to call them out by name, but we know they have nothing to do with the application process. Like, two of the people that they included are liaisons from the Michigan State Police to the legislature. They basically do the lobbying on behalf of the Michigan State Police to the legislature. Okay, that's fine. We can argue that maybe those jobs shouldn't exist, and that's a separate conversation, but why are CPL fees being used to pay for them? Shouldn't their salaries already be covered under an appropriation? What about all these managers in other areas that have nothing really to do with the CPL application process? Aren't there not already appropriations to pay for their salaries? And as you know, money is fungible. So if you can kind of take money from one area to kind of pay for something, then hey, guess what? We have money left over in this other area that now we can use for something else. And even though you have dedicated money on one side and maybe the money on the other side isn't dedicated, you move it around a little bit, now you have free money to spend. You basically, it comes out to CPL holders are being treated like a cash cow, that we are being milked extensively for these profits to go pay for other things that have nothing to do with it. And that's, I'm sure, already gets the blood boiling of a lot of your listeners that, oh my goodness, they are taxing our rights. They are taxing it to such an extent where they are making potentially upwards of a 90% profit, coming out to easily tens of millions of dollars every year in just profit alone on our rights. But then juxtapose that against the backdrop of what happens if you don't do this. If you don't this, it is a felony that can ruin your life and cause the stripping of your rights for the rest of your life. This isn't just motivation. It is racketeering, effectively. You must do this. You must jump into our profit scheme, or you will be charged with a felony and you will lose freedoms for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Tom, question on my mind. How does Michigan stack up compare to our CPL fees? How does our fees compare to other states?
Oh, wonderful question. We actually did a lot of research on this, and I even wrote a big 10-page, incredibly detailed memo on it, which if anyone wants that, they'll find online and email me directly, too, if you want a copy of it. The way we looked at it, and it's hard to compare, because you have initial fees, you have renewal fees. Well, maybe this license is good for 4 years. Maybe this license is good for longer. How do you bring lifetime licenses in here? We have fingerprinting fees that are separate from the licensing fees. So how do we account for all these different variables? What we did is we looked at the cost that it took to maintain a license for a certain period of time, and it was about 20 or 25 years. That way, everything could kind of average itself out with initial fees versus maintenance fees. And where Michigan came in, we looked at all 50 states, including the District of Columbia. Michigan came in the fourth most expensive in the nation, behind only California, Illinois, and Washington, D.C. Those were the only entities ahead of us. That's how expensive it is in this state to obtain and maintain a CPL when compared nationally. And oh, yeah. By the way, the Michigan State Police appear to be making a huge profit on that, and if you don't do it, it's a felony.
Wow. You know, those are, that's not good company. I'm not sure I want to be listed up there with Washington, D.C., in California, of all places.
Yeah,
wow.
Two of those three entities took a significant amount of litigation to even issue licenses, and the third one is constantly being challenged on various matters. You're absolutely right. That is not good company, especially for a state like Michigan, who supposedly is supposed to have a pro-gun title to it. And the problem is, when you look into things, we're really not as pro-gun as people necessarily think.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, on top of that, we have pistol registration, mandatory registration as well. So, gosh, man, this is a lot to think about, Tom. Where is it? Where does it look like it's going right now?
Well, what's going is the litigation is moving forward. The Attorney General's office is representing the Michigan State Police, which is standard. They are motioning for summary judgment. They believe they've done nothing wrong. They want the judge to declare so. Summary judgment is also nothing abnormal. I think every lawsuit we've ever engaged in, we've had our defendant motion for summary judgment. We're fairly confident we're going to come out on top here, and when we do, the Michigan State Police is going to have to give us everything that we asked for in addition to everything that they gave us. And I want to circle back around to one thing. I said that this is what the information that they've given us, the data that they have given us, this is what it looks like. Now, there may very well be a good explanation for these discrepancies. And if there is a good explanation, all the state police has to do is just come out and tell us. There is nothing stopping them from telling us their explanation other than them. A little bit of transparency can go a long way here. The problem is, if there's not a good answer, then no amount of transparency is going to save them.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Well, boy. Well, Tom, I know you've got some other litigation going on with Michigan Open Carry. Can you give us, you take 3 or 4 minutes and go through what else? You got a full plate. What's on your plate right now?
Yeah, we got a full plate, most certainly. We are engaging in more pro-gun litigation in this state than anyone else. And we're also doing it with the help of other groups. We've had Michigan Gun Owners, Delta County Gun Owners, and the National Association of Gun Rights. Those three organizations, they chipped in to help us with the two FOIA suits. So huge thanks to them. I love that it's a community effort with those two FOIA suits. We're expecting any day now, hopefully, to hear from the Michigan Supreme Court about our lawsuit on school preemption, basically whether or not schools can make their own laws regarding the possession of firearms, or whether or not they have to bow to state law that allows for the lawful possession of firearms in schools. We are obviously arguing that, no, schools must follow state law, just like everybody else. Schools are arguing that, no, they're special. We had oral arguments a few months ago in front of the Michigan Supreme Court. We're waiting for them to weigh in on it. And the fourth lawsuit that we have going on is with an arena authority in Grand Rapids. We sued them a couple of years ago. We won at the trial level. It's another preemption issue. They want to make their own rules. We said, no, you have to abide by state law. We won at the trial level, and they are now appealing that to the Court of Appeals. So we are working on defending that win at the Court of Appeals. To us, it's a good thing that they've appealed, because a win at the lower court is only sets precedent in that one county. If we can bring this to the Court of Appeals and we can win at the Court of Appeals, which I think we can, that sets statewide precedent. So that's kind of where that thing we get into. Look, this is we don't go about these things just with open carry in mind or just with a few people in mind. The four lawsuits that we're engaged in, every single one of them, and that the four are the two FOIA suits, the school preemption case and the arena preemption case, every single one of those lawsuits is geared towards benefiting every gun owner in the state, whether you carry openly, whether you carry concealed. We want to benefit everyone. That kind of goes back to things that we've talked about in the past, that I view open carry as a tool to do more than just benefit open carry alone. I want to benefit the entire gun community. I want to grow the entire gun community. That's what Michigan Open Carry is about, and that is what our litigation is about.
Mm-hmm. And that that kind of dovetails with your speech next week at the Second Amendment March on unity amongst gun owners, doesn't it?
Yeah. In fact, if you like what we're doing, and you want to support what we're doing, we can use the help of everyone. Michigan Open Carry is a 100% not-for-profit organization. I earn $0 and 0 cents doing what I do with the organization, as well as the rest of our board of directors. When I go somewhere, I pay for my gas mileage. I take my own time off of work. I do this because it's a passion, and this is how we go about it. So if you want to help us and push these efforts forward, and we have a long list of things to jump onto next, go to miopencarry.org or Google michiganopencarry.org and donate to our legal fund. Every dollar helps us. Every little bit helps. Even small donations add up over time. You can do a reoccurring donation every month. It all helps, and it all goes towards making these huge benefits and these huge strides to push the entire community forward.
That's awesome, Tom. I can attest on the, you know, Michigan Open Carry is small, but they are definitely potent and doing a lot of things. I'm a life member of Michigan Open Carry, and boy, I would love it if every one of you out there can go ahead, go to miopencarry.org, sign up, donate to the legal causes, because they're for everyone, whether you concealed carry or open carry. It's for all gun owners and Second Amendment advocates. Tom, this has been great. Now, when we hear from the state Supreme Court on that pending case, I want to have you back on so you can update us on that. That sound good?
Yeah, sure, especially if it's a favorable ruling.
Well, we'll have to talk about it, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. So, Tom, I will see you next week, June 20th, at the Second Amendment March at the Lansing State Capitol. Thank you very, very much for being on the Home Defense Show.
Thanks for having me again, Skip.
All right. Okay, folks, we're going to take a short break here. 2 minutes. Go ahead and check out miopencarry.org. Go on Facebook, search on Michigan Open Carry, and then check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and elitefirearms.us. When we come back, I will tell you what I really think. This is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for the Armed America Report. What is it this week?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, just seeing an armed citizen with an AR-15 in his hands was enough to cause a knife-wielding assailant to stop his assault on a pregnant woman in Kendall County, Illinois. He was half a breath away from getting his head blown off, and he knew that, the protective neighbor said, after he used America's most popular semi-automatic rifle to thwart the attack. The mother-to-be had ordered a pizza and had gone outside to wait for the pizza driver. While she was waiting, a tenant from her apartment complex started a heated conversation with her. As the argument escalated, the woman's husband came out to see what was going on. The assailant pulled a knife and stabbed the husband, nicking the woman with the same swipe of the blade. Shouting, including a threat to kill the woman's baby, ensued. That caught the attention of a neighbor who works as a private security officer. He looked to see what was happening, saw blood in the hallway, grabbed his AR-15. Upon seeing the rifle, the assailant bolted. Police arrived thereafter and tracked down the suspect.
Thanks, Colonel. AR-15s, or black rifles, as the media is so fond of calling them, are a great choice for a home defense weapon. The media and those on the left have spent several decades vilifying the AR-15, calling it a weapon of war and an assault rifle. The media, as well as politicians on the left, will tell you there is no place for AR-15s in civilian hands. They are of the mistaken belief that AR-15s are the same rifles used by the U.S. military. But this couldn't be further from the truth. Here are the facts. 1. The AR designation in AR-15 does not stand for assault rifle. It stands for Armalite, the name of the company that first developed the AR-15 back in 1956. True assault rifles are capable of firing fully automatic, like a machine gun. But AR-15s fire only semi-automatic. That is, you press the trigger once and get only one shot. 2. AR-15s are not military-grade weapons. Why would any top-of-the-line military choose an AR-15 when there are so many other rifles and carbines capable of firing on full auto and three-round burst? They wouldn't, and that's why U.S. forces do not carry AR-15s. The standard issue these days would be MP4s, which fire semi-auto and three-round burst for standard infantry. Special forces carry M4A1s, which fire semi-auto and full auto. So, when the media tells you that AR-15s are the same carbines used by the U.S. military, they are lying to you. And 3, AR-15s, while not suitable to fight wars, are great at protecting civilian homes and have quickly become the most popular rifle in America for that reason. When I'm on the street, my primary self-defense weapon is my handgun, but at home, I keep a decked-out AR-15 with EOTech sight as well as a laser sighting system. While I don't need fully automatic for home defense, it's nice to know I have that 30-round magazine should the crap ever hit the fan.
Skip, did you say the media wasn't telling the truth?
Yes. Well, half are not telling the truth. The other half are just stupid.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes more sense.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Boy, great two segments with Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry. Those folks are busy, very, very busy, and it sounds like they're doing some good work. So we will keep up to date with Tom and MI Open Carry, and hopefully we will hear very soon about that pending state Supreme Court case, which could help all of us. So, if you didn't hear all about that, you can go to a couple episodes ago on Home Defense Show. 2 months ago, we interviewed Tom about that as well, and we're just waiting on the result. Okay, before I tell you what I really think here, I just ran across some news, and it's just breaking news here. Dancing FBI agent charged after weapon discharge. Remember, we covered that extensively last week. When FBI agent Chase Bishop went to a Denver bar, he probably didn't expect to be part of an incident that might well ruin his career. The dancing agent has now been charged following the negligent discharge of his firearm on a crowded dance floor. This is from the Denver District Attorney Beth McCann. Denver has formally charged an off-duty FBI agent in connection with the discharge of his weapon at a Denver nightclub. Chase Bishop, looks like he's about 30 years old, is charged with one count of assault in the second degree. Whoa. Bishop turned himself in to Denver police on Tuesday, June 12th. The charge was filed today. Additional charges may be filed based on the results of a pending blood alcohol content analysis of the defendant, which has not yet been received. Bishop's negligent shot struck another bar patron, making this a potential Class 4 felony. He's looking at a fine of up to $500,000 and 6 years behind bars. It reminds me of Die Hard, that first movie, when those FBI agents, you know, Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson. They got blown up in their helicopter. Lieutenant Dwayne Robinson said, well, looks like we're going to need us some more FBI guys. We're running out of FBI guys. All kinds of bad things happening with the FBI right now, but let's not get bogged down in that. Let's just move right on because we're running out of time. I want to tell you what I really think. I was out mowing my lawn this morning. I love mowing grass. Sometimes I feel like Forrest Gump on that little snapper mower that he used in the movie. There's just something about the smell of freshly cut grass that makes me smile. I've got a Cub Cadet 42-inch mower deck. It's bright yellow and only a year old. Of course, my neighbor across the street, he's a John Deere man, so he's green. But I couldn't afford a John Deere, even though I'm told that nothing runs like a deer. I don't know if that's true, but rest assured, I'm not green with envy and will remain quite content with my little yellow machine. As long as it starts first try and the grass gets shorter when I run over things, then my life is full and rewarding. It seems my life can be measured in the lawns I've known and mowed. When I was a kid, we had a big lawn, but it was in the country and was mostly sand burrs and, well, sand, I guess. Go figure. We had an old push mower that barely started and always kicked up a cloud of sand that hurt my face when I was mowing. But as a 12-year-old boy who'd never known anything different, it didn't really bother me all that much. So I just did what I was told and mowed the yard, sand and all. I remember I was out mowing one summer. It was one of those hot and sweaty days, and I just wanted to go swimming with all my friends. Have you ever noticed that when you want to do something really bad, it seems like, in your own mind at least, everyone else is already doing it, and you're the only one left out? On that particular 90-degree day, I felt like I was the only kid who had to mow the lawn, and I knew in my heart of hearts that it just wasn't fair. It was forced labor, just short of slavery. I was home alone, not sure where my mom was, probably out garage sailing or buying groceries or something, but I remember hearing the sound of screeching tires over the drone of the push mower. Then I saw my dog drag itself off the paved road in front of our house and hobble over to me. I shut off the mower and stared down at my dog, who just continued to whine and cry in front of me. He was lying on the ground looking up at me with those big brown eyes with both back legs broken and bloody, as if to say, "Fix me, Skip. Help me." I didn't know what to do. So I went across the road to my grandfather's general store and asked him for help. He never said a word. He simply pulled a pistol out of his pocket and handed it to me. I remember that he looked me straight in the eyes, and I realized that my mettle was being tested. I took the gun and returned to my dying dog, where the lady who had run over him was still standing nearby. I was sweating in the hot sun. I raised a small pistol and aimed for his head. My hands hovered there over my dog for a long time. I think I was crying, but I can't be sure. Then the woman next to me spoke. "Would you like me to do that for you?" I tried to sound nonchalant, as if I didn't care and that this was no big deal to me. "Yeah, sure." I handed her the gun, and she killed my dog with one well-placed shot to the head. I was never so grateful to anyone as I was to that merciful woman on that day. I never attached to dogs after that. To this day, I look them in the eyes and all I can see is brown puppy dog eyes of summer and death. Perhaps someday I'll be able to overcome that. It's on my list of things to do. My wife, she loves dogs, and she'll probably never understand why I don't enjoy them. But that's good, because if she understood in the same way I did, then she wouldn't be able to enjoy them and bond with them. We have an 8-pound terrier named Pepper. Pepper was a compromise dog. Sarah is a wonderful woman, and I love her, but I tell you, sometimes that woman can be like a pit bull. She gets an idea in her head, and she doesn't let it go. She latches onto that idea and shakes her head back and forth until I finally say, "Yeah, sure, I'd love to have a dog, honey." Of course, I don't want a dog, but I have to pretend like I do to make her happy. I'm not very good at that sort of thing. But then I digress. Pepper was a compromise. Her poop is small, so I don't have to worry about it being all over the lawn. I hate stepping in dog crap. And Pepper is only about 8 inches tall at the shoulder and just under 8 pounds. So she's easy to ignore and push away when she jumps up on me. Pepper runs around our house happy as a lark. I tolerate her, and my wife and kids adore her. but it's a daily struggle for me to even reach down and pet that dog. But she's a good dog. Some wounds, I fear, never completely heal. And that got me to thinking. If the death of a dog can affect me so profoundly, then what would I be like if I had to use deadly force to stop another human? Sure, I could justify what I'd done easily enough, at least on an intellectual level, but still, taking another human life? Killing a man? I would be alive, but I fear that a part of me would have died. And I guess that's why God made psychiatrists, because I'm sure I would need one if I ever had to kill someone, even in self-defense. Yeah, I suppose some wounds never heal, not completely, but I'm working on it. And that's what I really think. Well, folks, we're about out of time here, but I want you to check out Second Amendment March. Go to 2amarch.com, the number 2, the letter A, march.com, 2amarch.com, June 20th, next Wednesday at the State Capitol in Lansing. We got Madison Rising, the most patriotic band in America. We've got the Lieutenant Governor, Brian Kelly. We got Attorney General Bill Schuette. We've got Senator Pat Kolbeck. We've got all three major Republican Party candidates for governor. So we want you to check it out. It'll be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 2amarch.com. Go there. Be there. I will see you there. I'll know if you weren't there. And, of course, I'll be there signing my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry book. I'll be speaking as well. Don't forget our sponsors, elitefirearms.us. Check out Larry Jackson. Find out how to choose the right self-defense gun for you and your family. And then protect yourself from the criminal justice system. Go to firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and find out how they can defend your family. Okay, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, but it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coriel. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!